And second hour here, Robbie and Rex showed 102.5 The Game. Connor Newt in for Robbie on a college basketball extravaganza episode of Robbie and Rex Road, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are going to transition to college football now with our good friend Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel. Adam, I know there's really no off-season anymore when you're covering a college football team, but how would you compare, you know, this stretch here as you've got the Vols in the portal and people are mad about them not getting this guy and not getting that guy, and Danny White's out there tweeting to people? I mean, what can you tell us about covering this beat right now and where the Vols are in the portal?
I mean, there's a pretty high anxiety level. I would just say it's with the fan base, because I don't sense as much of that in the football facility. But then, yeah, when you see Danny White tweeting, where it looks like it's sort of hitting a nerve when he was pulled into the blame for the transfer portal inactivity, you think, well, maybe it's in there too. I mean, it's just, here's what I tell people, and I've reminded myself of this every year. Tennessee is usually the most inactive team in the portal each of the past 3 or 4 years. Under Josh Heupel, a lot of teams get 20 to 30 guys. Josh Heupel usually gets like 8 to 10. And so I think they hope to get a little more than that this year. But that means they're going to get fewer guys on the front end, and they may get fewer guys on the back end. They're just not going to pull in as many guys as others do. And that's a roster building philosophy of Josh Heupel. He wants to lean a lot on high school kids still and developing them and seeing who pans out and then just cutting loose the ones that don't. That's another reason why you see, you know, a number of guys that are like second year guys that are hopping in the portal, and you thought, I never even saw him play much. Well, that's why. Not saying that's right or wrong, but that's what's going on a lot with the roster. Number two, I think this is really hard to do, but we almost have to treat this like it's a signing day. You know, when you get to the end of the portal, you know, get the ledger and say, on the left, here are the players they lost, on the right, here are the players they gained, and then judge it from there. I think judging it minute by minute is, boy, it's rough. I mean, I tweeted the other night, Tennessee had lost 20 scholarship guys and gained 2. And, you know, I mean, you should look at it during it, but I think you just can't freak out until the end. I mean, Tennessee's got more guys on campus now. They're trying to line up some visits with other guys over the weekend. And, you know, they've got a lot of holes to fill, but they still have some time. And new guys are jumping in the portal, and that's what I think people forget, is that new guys are coming onto the market each day.
Yeah. No, well, yeah, no, no question. I do, and I hear you totally on Heupel's philosophy. I did think that maybe – one, I guess I thought maybe it would change a little this year, given, well, the urgency of next season for him, frankly, and just, you know, the fact that it just seems like as we look at these teams who have advanced, it's different. Like Ole Miss is super portal heavy. We know the teams like Florida State that have just gone total portal. It has not worked out. I don't think it's sustainable. But also the teams that are doing really well seem to have a pretty good balance of it. So a couple questions for you on that. One, I do see Tennessee fans complain, like, do they have the money? Is there some financial, because when this guy goes here instead of Tennessee, or, you know, whatever, goes there instead of Tennessee, that's a common question. Do you feel, so I'm assuming they're fine when it comes to money, but I just want to ask you that question. And also, Jordan Ross is the one, it's hard for me to understand that given the opportunity on his side, and also just for Tennessee needing some continuity and some players returning, what is your thought on him getting in there?
Well, first off, on the money part, yeah, I think they have the money. I think there's one thing that has hurt them more than any. It's that they're slow. This has always been the thing with Josh Heupel on the portal. You can say he's methodical, deliberate, patient, whatever, but they're slow. You know, a lot of the guys that they have targeted and missed on are guys that never got to campus. You know, they're the fourth or fifth visit of a guy lined up rather than the first. And so a lot of these guys never even get to campus. I think there's some of that they need to, well, I know they've already evaluated in past years and not changed it. I think Tennessee is less eager to get into the gray area of this era and these rules than other teams are. You could say that's from the Jeremy Pruitt era. They're a little more careful than others. You could say that's Danny White wanting to, you know, follow every rule to the T. There's a lot of things you could say about that, but I do think they are less eager to get into the gray area of things. In other words, like, you know, Indiana already signed a bunch of guys, and they had just a slew of visitors right after the portal opened. And, you know, I have a hard time believing that that team and a lot of other schools, you know, were booking flights at 12:01 a.m. when the portal opened. They had those lined up beforehand. They were contacted. Most schools do that. I don't think Tennessee does that as much as others. And so that's made them slow. I think their decision-making has been slow. They usually add fewer guys, and so I think they target fewer guys, and you just can't do that. With Jordan Ross, yeah, that's a weird one. I mean, you could say Jim Knowles wants bigger edge rushers.
Yeah.
You know, that could have been a little bit of it. I don't think that's quite it, though. You know, they targeted some of the best edge rushers. They get the edge rusher from Alabama they're trying to line up to bring in right now in the next couple of days. So they're targeting guys that maybe told him, hey, you may not be the surefire starter. That could have, you know, been a little bit of it. But I think he wanted more money. I think he made a big, big swing. He knew he had some leverage, and Tennessee said, we'll give you more money. We're not giving you that much more money. And, you know, I think he'll find it elsewhere, maybe at LSU, maybe at Miami. But I think he'll find it elsewhere.
Talking to Adam Sparks of Knoxville News Sentinel. Adam, speaking of guys that were on campus, the number one quarterback in the portal, Sam Levitt, visited Knoxville yesterday, according to some reports. Obviously, this is a guy that's been around town throughout the portal. He visited Kentucky, visited Texas Tech, visited LSU. Now he's in Knoxville. Is there any validity to the idea of him potentially being the Vols' next quarterback?
Yeah, he absolutely could be. It's just, it's a weird situation because, I mean, there's almost like a swap left, swap right approach to a lot of these things. I love you, but I've got somebody else on the other line that I love more, and it depends on if they're answering the call or not. I mean, we saw that with Lane Kiffin,
oh, yeah.
Right? I want Sam Levitt. Oh, wait, Damon Williams is hopping in the portal.
Hey,
so,
Sam, go get me some popcorn while I have an important text here with someone.
That's right. So, I mean, with Levitt, I think, you know, he went to Kentucky. I don't think he was ever going to go to Kentucky. I think he was just biding time a little bit, and then he gets to LSU, and it seemed like he's into LSU, they're into him, but both of them kind of seemed like plan Bs to each other. Oregon is still, we don't know what that situation, we would assume they're going to have a vacancy at quarterback, Oregon, so if they do, then, you know, he's from there, he's from Oregon. I think the thought with him is that he's sort of, you know, slow playing this, seeing if Oregon is going to be open, and then he can go home. But he likes the possibility of Tennessee. He likes the possibility of LSU. So I think a guy for him that's waiting around this long, and then money comes into it too. If you get down to the end of the portal, does his, let's say he's asking for $4 million, does that suddenly become $6 million? You know, who has the more leverage in that situation? So yes, Tennessee could get him. I think Tennessee is one of maybe three or four. I think the difference with Tennessee is I don't think they have as good of a plan B as maybe they would want.
Yeah, and the Oregon thing, of course, is really interesting and, I guess, potentially troubling. Do you feel like there's any way, like, Tennessee could, I guess, make an offer he can't refuse – to get him to, like, commit before he wait? Because obviously if Oregon beats Yeah, I mean, I think if Oregon beats Indiana, that probably increases the likelihood of Dante Moore leaving. I would think it's probably a pretty high likelihood anyway, given where he's projected. But then you're waiting more for any sort of, you know, final word. So that's one. And then also, if they don't get him, I mean, look, they obviously have two good young options, but like, do you expect no matter what for them to at least have someone out of the portal as a veteran at that position?
Yeah, they're going to get somebody. They're not going to just have two guys. I mean, the question is, who do they get if they don't get Leavitt? And if you now somebody else could hop into the portal. We just saw that with Damon Williams, and so don't discount that possibility. There's still some time to do that. But I mean, if you look at the guys that are in there now, I mean, of the top 20, I think it's something like 16, 17 of the top 20 have already been taken, committed, and that doesn't mean signed. so that, they could still get somebody. I think if you don't get Leavitt, you start to get more and more closer to the possibility that they bring in a guy who can compete with George McIntyre, Faison Brandon, as opposed to a guy that just comes in as the surefire starter. And, you know, we talked about anxiety at the start of the call. I just get the sense over there that there's less anxiety about quarterback than there is defense. And I think that's a lot of the belief in Josh Heupel and that system. I think the fact that they got Joey Aguilar and made him into the SEC's passing leader this year kind of gives them some confidence. They feel like they can figure that out. They do need another quarterback. And I think they think they need somebody who's more ready than George McIntyre or Faison Brandon. But they still got time and they got money and, you know, we'll see. But defense, it's a weird thing. They need one quarterback, but they need a lot of defense. And so they're having to sort of juggle those two things at once.
Adam, Tennessee did get a portal ad yesterday. They got Kayan Lee from Auburn. His career stats so far, 31 tackles, 4 pass deflections, and 3 interceptions in his tenure at Auburn. What kind of a bolster does that guy add to the secondary in Tennessee?
Well, I mean, it was a need, and sometimes we overuse that term, but it was absolutely a need. I mean, I was looking at the depth chart yesterday before they got him, and, you know, I was looking at what potentially would be their starting lineup, like if they played tomorrow, and it ain't good. I mean, it's not great talent-wise, but it's especially not good depth-wise. And at corner, I mean, you had Ty Redmond and you had Trey Poteet, who played his first major action in the Music City Bowl. And you just can't go into a year, you know, with that big a question mark at corner. And then, you know, they got a safety a few days ago. They still don't have a nickel unless Lee plays nickel. So, you know, they still got to add a number of guys in the portal in the secondary. But that does fill the role of, again, if you played tomorrow, you have Ty Redmond and you have a multi-year starter in the SEC in Lee. I mean, he started for 2.5 years at Auburn. He played reasonably well. They've had a lot of success with just bringing in corners in the portal and making them work and sometimes making them, you know, become first-round picks. They've done that a couple times. So it absolutely feels a need. They can just check that box. Need a starting corner? Done. And so it allows them to move on to other things.
Adam Sparks, Knoxville News Sentinel. There is no off season for Adam Sparks, although I guess at some point you will probably travel to Australia or New Zealand or something, right? Like in the spring. So do we have a big trip planned? Do we going somewhere this year?
London and Paris, and that's in the middle of spring practice when they're off, not when they're practicing.
Look at you.
And then Greece, Italy, Germany. I think in summer. I think.
Oh my goodness, the world traveler.
The itinerary is managed by somebody else. But
no, I understand. And you guys are going to find the Vols bar in every single one of these countries, too. So I have no doubt about that.
If there's one, she'll find it.
Yes, she will. Adam Sparks, thanks, my friend. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, guys. We'll see you.
All right, Adam Sparks, Knoxville News Center. We'll react to that. And if anybody has any, you know, travel suggestions for him on any of those spots, you can chime in there. Robbie and Rex showed 102.5 The Game. 94.9 The Fan is your home for Vanderbilt women's basketball tonight. The Commodores take on Missouri at Memorial Gym at 6:30. Pre-game begins at 6:15 on 94.9. And, of course, Jake Lyman on the call there. Catch that. Also, I would say you could listen to that while you're in Memorial Gym. You don't want to miss that show. I mean, Michaela Blake's alone worth the price of admission. Pretty special stuff going on in Memorial Gym this year. So on the Vols football front, Connor, how concerned are we about the lack of portal activity, which, as Adam pointed out, and probably needs to be reminded every year, is Heupel's philosophy. He has wanted to, and I think Heupel has looked. I mean, you look at Georgia. Georgia now, they have recruited at a high level in high school football, and so that's, if you can do that, and then you supplement with the portal, that's been a great formula.
Yeah,
but also I think that I think Heupel does need to adjust a little bit, and maybe, as Adam said, be a little bit quicker at times with some of these things. But what's the concern level, and I guess how important is Sam Levitt to this 2026 team?
I understand the frustration. I mean, he's posting pictures of him recruiting 2-star cornerbacks in Martin, Tennessee, and I guess he was out there trying to get Ty Simpson as well, and we all know how that went. He's going to the NFL. So I would say getting Sam Levitt is very important as far as the team next year. It's either that or get someone else out of the portal who's not nearly as talented, or you can start George McIntyre. You're not going to start Faison Brandon as a true freshman. I don't think he's good enough to do that. Maybe even if he is the top quarterback in that class, I don't think he's good enough to start right out of the gates like that. And that's the key to building a quarterback in college football, is especially with the portal now, you can bring in some veteran leadership, develop them over a year or two, and then they'll be ready to go when their time is coming. But I think it is important to get Sam Levitt, especially knowing the caliber of player he is. You mentioned it earlier, Joe. You really like him. I really like him. I think he's an SEC caliber quarterback. It's a matter of, if you can get him, okay, how can you build off of that? Can you get more receivers in here? Because you're losing Chris Brazel. You're going to lose some key production in your wide receiver room. You've lost some running back in Peyton Lewis. It's a matter of, can you build your offense around that guy? And look, Adam mentioned it as well. New guys are hitting the portal every single day. This isn't just, you have one day to go, and then that's it. If you don't get them, you don't get them. No, the new guys are hitting the portal every day, and things are in line with each other. So I think they're going to be okay as far as portal recruiting. Like you said, this is Heupel's philosophy. Starts out a little slow, and then they're all happy with him by the end. So I think he'll be okay. I think Sam Levitt is very important to getting this started.
Yeah, I mean, they'll get some more guys for sure, and it'll look better at the end, but – you don't know, but if Levitt's off the market, it's pretty thin out there right now. Now, yeah, somebody else could shake free, but it may not happen. Now, last year there was no excitement when they got Joey Aguilar, and that was their – I mean, they went after a bunch of guys, and they tried to pry guys from their teams. Now, that was also a different time when you could do that in the spring, which is different now, right?
Yeah.
So – they were trying to get Luke Altmyer out of Illinois and a few other guys who have already eluded my mind. But, they eventually settled on Joey Aguilar. It worked out really well. But there's no guarantee you're going to get that either. Even like the sort of way down the list guy who's going to come in and play as well as he did. So I think it would be huge for them. I love Sam Levitt. I think his running ability – I think his skill set fits the offense, but I think he'd really be he'd give them a big add in that way. That would be big. But the Oregon thing, it makes sense. Sense for him to go around, check out other places, get everybody excited, drive that price up a little bit, and then, I mean, if you're Oregon, and I don't know off the top of my head, just like the other day we're talking about Alabama, and it's like, Oh, yeah, Keelan Russell, people are – Bama fans are telling us, right. So that makes sense with the Ty Simpson thing. I don't know if there's anybody waiting the wings at Oregon who, they would feel comfortable just handing off to.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised at all if they were all in on Sam Levitt. If Dante Moore goes, and it's just – I mean, Nick Baumgartner has him going first. He thinks he's going to go before Mendoza. I don't know about that.
I don't know.
But I think he's second.
Yeah, I think New York would take a chance
so,
on
him. I mean, if you're going to go that high, you're going to go, right? $4, $5, $6 million, that's great. I mean, that's where the market is for the top college quarterbacks, but it's still, you know, if you're picked in the top five in the draft, that's still a much better deal. That's what you're going to do. Yeah. So, but yeah, I think some of this stuff is Vols fans panicking. I understand some of it. And look, they're not happy with Josh Hopper right now. And I get that too.
Yeah. I mean, some of that is from the product he put on the field last year. And it's believable, you know? You're upset with his coaching philosophy, and you're upset with everything about that, you know, his clock management, his offensive style, his defensive style. You're upset with that. So this just kind of adds to it. But I think this is going to be a standard Vol procedure in once it rains, it pours, and maybe not to the level of, oh, my God, we've won the transfer portal lottery. But I think if you get Levitt, then tensions will start to ease up a little bit. More commitments will follow through. And overall, I think you'll build a pretty decent roster heading into next year.
All right, we come back. Preds with a big one tonight at home against the Islanders. We will talk to Andrew Burnett, Nashville Predators coach. Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5 The Game. Connor Newt in for Robbie Stanley today. Happy to bring in our next guest, Preds coach Andrew Burnett, who I'm sure is happy to be home. This segment with Andrew Burnett brought to you by Arrow Exterminators, going beyond the call. Arrow Exterminators, proud partner with the Nashville Predators. Andrew, I know you guys were able to probably come back after Minnesota, but this is an extended road trip. How is it to be back and away from like negative 30 or whatever the heck it was in Edmonton?
Morning, guys. Happy New Year. It's been a while. Yeah, I know. We've kind of been all over the place, starting from Minnesota and then come back for a few days and kind of hit every spot from, you know, Vegas, Utah to Northern Canada. And yeah, it's nice to be back for sure.
How would you assess, I mean, overall a successful trip? I know it didn't end the way you wanted to, but a successful trip on the ice, how would you assess it? And I know sometimes those trips are really good for teams and turn into some opportunities even, you know, for guys to hang out more and things like that. Like how do you look at the whole thing after, now that it's done?
Well, I mean, I think it was for us, you know, a lot of times those trips are a little bit of a team bonding. You're kind of all together through a stretch of games or weeks, actually. You know, you have your rookie party and you do these things that the guys get together, and it's really good for team bonding. It can go either way. You know, I've been on some of them. Fortunately, I think for our group, we just became tighter. But I thought sometimes it can go a little, you know, astray when you're in tough buildings every night and you never know which way it's going to go, especially as a coach. But after you go through it, just like everything else, you feel tighter as a group. And, you know, we did some good things and a little disappointed a little bit at the end of the last game. But for us, it was a good road trip.
Coach, tonight you guys are in action against the New York Islanders. Obviously, your first game back home. That's a team with some good goaltending. Ilya Sorokin, David Rittich, a couple of good goaltenders on their end. How can you guys look to attack the goal and put some pucks in the back of the net tonight?
Well, yeah, it's going to be a challenge for us, you know, especially coming off these trips as a coach. You're always a little worried about the first game back from extended trip. And, you know, we didn't get in until about 5 yesterday. So kind of a sleepless night at times for your coach. But the Islanders are playing really well. Obviously, they're coming off a 9-0 win against Jersey a couple of nights ago. And they've been going pretty good all year. You know, I think probably a little bit different team that we've seen in the past from them. You know, the way they've been putting up goals, and they're playing a fast game right now. So it's going to be a challenge like every night in the NHL. I mean, the margins every night, the parity in the league, if you look through the standings and if you watch games every night, they're basically one-goal games. And we'll get into a one-goal game here today. And the one thing with our group is we've been kind of battle-testing that situation, even got away from us in the Oiler game the other night, but it was, you know, 1-0 with about 4 minutes left in the second. So that'll be the type of game it's going to be, and we have to be prepared and mentally, you know, especially with our mindset going into tonight, all kinds of different variables. For us, it's like another road game. We got to treat it like our last road game of our trip, and, you know, that's kind of our mindset here coming in.
Talking with Preds coach Andrew Burnett. Yeah, well, you just hit on what I was going to ask you about, Andrew, that, you know, the standings, like you said. I mean, it's and obviously in the West, I mean, Colorado is having just an insane season, and Dallas is also, you know, up there. Now, of course, you guys have had success, too, against those teams. So I wonder, you know, one, how that, I guess, plays into confidence. But when you look at the standings, I mean, it's everyone so bunched together right now. I mean, you guys would only be 6 points out of, you know, being first in the Pacific. You're in a huge glut with a bunch of teams. Where do you think you are now relative to the rest of the West?
Well, I think we're excited to be where we are. It's been the grind, obviously, to get to this spot. So it's nothing but excitement with our group that we've climbed ourselves back into this race. I think it's great for hockey. It's great for fans. It's great for all the different cities that we're all in it. And when you're in it, there's no better feeling in to play hockey is that these games and these points matter every night. And like I said, we're grateful we're able to get ourselves into this position. So let's enjoy it. And it's awesome to be playing hockey right now and to be in this kind of race.
Coach, I'm curious on your thoughts on the play of your veterans in the lineup, particularly Steven Stamkos and Philip Forsberg. Those are guys that I feel like, I'm sure you feel the same way, have come on as the year has gone on. What kind of a momentum factor do you think those two provide to your team?
Well, they're game changers for our group. When they're gone, it makes our group extremely dangerous. I think they've kind of got us back into this race, especially over the last 6 weeks or 8 weeks that we played, where their game and their production's really picked up. More than anything else for me is a coach is appreciate the leadership skills that they've brought to this group. And without those leadership skills, we wouldn't be in the position we are right now where we're fighting. They hung in there. They stayed with it. They stayed all in, even when things weren't going, you know, especially offensively as planned. They didn't change their personalities. They came to the rink every day, and they worked. And I think as a coach, you're very appreciative of that. And to see them get success here, especially of late, you know, as a coach, there's no greater joy to see those guys that put in the work, that stayed with it, that were character leaders, get to have some success right now and get rewarded for it. So they've been instrumental to say the least to where we're at right now. And now we got to keep going, regardless where we're at. We got to keep paddling here.
Yeah, I mean, with Stamkos in particular, Andrew, the 600 goal and the heater he's been on, it just seemed like that was such a rallying point for the guy. Like, how much has that been just as an energy boost to see him, you know, go like he's been going and then also reach that milestone?
Yeah, I think, you know, for our whole group, I think it gave us energy. You know, I think you could see the joy of when he got a 600 from our whole team. And we're very, very aware, I think all of us, the teammates, coaches, that he was getting close. And to see him do it and the play, the way that he's been playing to do it and how he's kind of dragged us back in this fight, I think it makes it, you know, I guess all the more a little bit rewarding for everybody. But, yeah, definitely gave us energy. I think any time you play with a player, I've been fortunate enough to play with a couple that get these big milestones, I think it brings excitement to the whole team. And the way he did it, and I think for his teammates to see what he, you know, early in the year when things weren't going quite the way he wanted to do, how his mindset, how he treated people, how he came to the rink every day and worked, how he stayed bought into what the team's doing. It was a team-first attitude. I think for our young players to see a player of his stature, a Hall of Famer, go through that and how he handled himself and how he brought himself to the rink every day, I think is just instrumental organizationally for everybody to see.
Coach, I want to ask you about kind of the accountability that goes on in the locker room. Obviously, you guys are happy to be in the place where you are, just a few points out of a wild card spot, looking to compete in the playoffs. But when things go south, kind of like they did the other night in Edmonton, what is the level of, or rather, are you appreciative of the level of accountability that your players show when things get tough?
Yeah, like I said, a little bit of the leadership. I think, obviously, nobody's happy as we left the building. And I think after the second period, to put ourselves in a hole when it was a really good hockey game. We knew, you know, Edmonton with their star players, and they were angry. They lost a few games at home. They were going to, you know, bring everything they had. And there was going to be chaotic moments in the game. And I think, you know, we hung in there, and we were in a pretty good spot. And unfortunately, we just you know, broke a little bit there at the end of the second period, and something we haven't done in a long time. So I think the accountability after the second was, I think we've gone through this so many times. I think we're holding each other accountable, not happy, kind of what happened. Now, the key for us is, you know, we dragged ourselves back into a little bit in the second, but to get down by four on the road is almost impossible to overcome. So I think we're learning from that. It was a great, to me, that was a great learning moment from our group, because we haven't done it for a while, and we got to remember how bad that feels. And you know, that's not where we want to be. That's not who we are, and that's not what we've been. Now, the key for this whole group is how to respond. And we've always responded, and I expect, you know, this is going to be a really hard game tonight, coming off these trips. Or I've played in these, I've coached in these. These are tough games. But we're a tough group, and we're resilient, and I expect us to learn from what went on, because that's going to happen every night. We just talked about parity. These momentum swings, these little small margins are, you know, hockey right now in the NHL, and we've gone through it, and we've seen both sides of it. And I think it'll make us better for it. But we can talk all we want. We got to keep going, and we got to keep moving forward. We're not where we want to be yet, but we're working every day to get there.
Talking to Preds coach Andrew Burnett. Last thing for you, Andrew. I tried to do some math here. I think I'm right on this, but if you take January and the, you know, very beginning of February, of course, the Olympic break coming in February, I think it's 18 games in 35 days for you guys. It's right around there. I'm confident I'm within a day or two, but I mean that type of, you know, and you obviously you do have some older guys in your group. What's the concern level? Where do you think you guys are just in terms of being able to handle that?
Thanks for reminding me.
Sorry.
Yeah, I think you worry about that all the time. I don't think there's a night that goes by that, you know, I don't wake up at 3 a.m. and start worrying about our energy level and where we're at and how many games we are. And then you throw the travel. You know, I think with our group, we're just trying to take it day to day. I know it sounds a little cliche, but that's the reality of the situation we're in. Every game, like I said, every game in this league's hard. Everybody's kind of going through a similar stretch of games. You know, I think if you look through the league, I bet you there's 95% of the leagues going through exactly the same thing. So that's where it is. And I keep saying to our group, regardless how tired we are, regardless, you know, travel, games, they're all going to be hard. Even if you rested, they're hard. And just accept it. It is what it is. And to me, you know, at the end of the day, I don't care if you played 15 games in a row and trying the mindset of our group is when the puck's dropped, the puck, regardless, I expect us that the puck's way more important to us than them. And that's kind of our mindset, and it's not always going to work out, and we understand the schedule has some moments in it, but that's our mindset, and we can't look past fatigue or look but our schedule, and we just got to keep grinding, and we've done it so far this year, and we're going to continue to do it, and yes, I worry all the time.
Well, sorry to bring it up, but you guys are grinding, and everybody appreciates it for sure. So, Preds coach Andrew Burnett, thanks so much for the time. Good luck tonight.
Thanks, guys.
All right. And that was Andrew Burnett, brought to you by Arrow Exterminators, going beyond the call. Arrow Exterminators, proud partner with the Nashville Predators. And we come back, someone will rant. I'm trying to get Newt to go nuclear, but someone will rant here on Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Did you accidentally trip into the dark web? Are you all right, buddy?
They love me because I give baby life-saving blood.
Oh, yucking around with Terry Bradshaw forever ago, right? Right. Did you just say you give them baby blood?
I would take Manning blood and drip it around the Titans practice field if I could.
I'll have some jalapeno poppers. What do you think, huh?
What are you doing? I say babies. What do you do?
Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
And you young kids who don't get that, that's a you problem.
I mean, I really did say Robbie and Rex Road. poor Robbie.
Do we need to check on PK? Like, he's got a weird blood obsession.
I mean, there's so much about him that is problematic. I mean, we don't have time today to get into it all. And I really don't even remember. I know you must remember, Ian. What the hell was he talking about there? Why were we talking about it? Blood?
Which part? Baby blood? Or
what was the baby blood stuff about?
Oh, it was about the Red Cross. He was going off about the Red Cross, some donation that they were promoting through the NFL. And then he got an email from the Red Cross saying, hey, we're waiting for your latest donation. And it's because he apparently saves babies with his blood.
Okay, now it kind of rings a bell. Yeah, wow.
I guess he has some type of blood type that is saves babies.
He has an amazing blood type.
Yeah.
Thank you, PK.
Congratulations, PK. This is a Rex Rant brought to you by Functional Medicine of Tennessee, by the way. Heal from the inside out. Check them out, functionalmedicineoftennessee.net. By the way, this is not a rant, but I forgot to say this earlier, but tonight on Totally Hits 93.3, catch MTSU men's basketball as the Blue Raiders take on UTEP, 8 o'clock p.m. Coverage also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and at totallyhitsnashville.com. So sometimes, is Newt going nuclear, or am I ranting right now?
You can rant.
You're just happy. You're just happy-go-lucky. Everything's great.
It takes a lot.
Everything's great
off
in your life. Okay, that's fine. So a lot of times I do a grab bag thing. My intended rant today, which I still will talk about, is Lane Kiffin. It's just college football, but Lane Kiffin, I'm just so sick of talking about him. Like, I've had so many rants about Lane Kiffin, like there should probably be a limit on how many times you can rant about Lane Kiffin. But just in case anybody missed it, yes, there are two assistants who are not going to be on the sideline tonight for Ole Miss against Miami in the semifinals. And as Pete Golden said the other day, hell yes, they want to be here. I mean, it's the height of just ridiculous pettiness. It's a joke. It's embarrassing. And if I were a parent with a kid good enough to play at LSU, you know, either whether a high school recruit or a portal recruit, I mean, you can get paid a lot of places. I don't see how Lane Kiffin isn't hurting himself. And he looks like an absolute jackass. He looks like, and he looks like he couldn't give less of a crap about these players. He claims that he wants to support and he wanted to coach them, and now he won't let these guys leave to go coach. It's a joke. And I know I've heard some LSU fans say, well, you know, the AD is worried about the tampering. So, okay, well, if that's what this is, that if Ole Miss, you know, let's get that on the record. Because I promise you that none of these coaches want to miss this opportunity. This could be the only time in their careers that they could be playing in a semifinal. That's very possible. It's very possible Lane Kiffin will never get there. I mean, America sure as hell hopes so, other than LSU Nation, right? It's a joke. And then you throw in the Damon Williams thing. Just a perfect encapsulation of Lane Kiffin. He's sitting at a basketball game with Sam Levitt. And he, you know, it's we get word right at that moment that, like, Damon Williams leaving Washington. He signed a contract, but he's leaving.
That whole situation is crazy, no?
Yeah.
Washington's, like, wanting to sue and for breach of contract.
Right.
And there's a buyout for a player of $50 million, something like that.
Okay, I didn't see the 50 million.
I heard there were
million.
I heard there was some type of buyout.
Yeah, they're trying to get damages back.
Like, if they steal your player after a contract, you have to pay the school. How does that work?
Well, so I think they're trying more to get the money, you know, trying to get the kid money back from the kid, right? We see this
gotcha.
With Georgia. Yeah. Yeah, 50. I don't know where you got 50 million. If that's
okay. Maybe it was maybe. I thought I heard that.
I think he signed a contract.
Now,
if there's 50, maybe if they're actually trying to sue the school, we have a Wisconsin and Miami of Ohio thing with that, right? Where you're trying to sue for damages. The problem is all these schools don't want to look bad and get into these things, and so then you also have these contracts, which they're very careful in the wording because they don't want it to come off as like their employees or that it's pay for play. I mean, the entire thing is so freaking dumb. I hope this is a big moment getting to where it has to be. Say it for the 10 millionth time. It doesn't have to be everyone being employees, but it has to be collective bargaining. You can be a contract employee and collectively bargain. And until you get to that, we're going to have stuff like this. And when you have Lane Kiffin involved, you're especially going to have someone taking advantage of this. And just, again, looking like just the most self-obsessed, all in for himself, couldn't give a crap about anyone else, couldn't give a crap about stepping on anybody else, coach in the country. But that's him. There's a bigger picture here with all that stuff. So Congratulations, Lane. Again, you made another rant. Must be very exciting for you.
Yeah, I mean, it is. That's my new favorite thing on Twitter right now, is watching him quote tweet pretty much anything Ole Miss does ever. And like Trinidad Chambliss, for example, announces he's coming back to Ole Miss. Lane Kiffin quote tweets it with whatever the Trinidadian flag or whatever, I guess, claiming he's supporting him, and then everyone just ignores him. It's pretty hilarious.
How long will Lane go claiming victory and success on both programs?
Right.
Like, he's in the middle of the season next year for LSU, and he's taking credit for Ole Miss's success the following year. Like, at one point does he turn the page?
Yeah. Well, and now, when he did the $50 million, or I'm sorry, when he did the, I got $50 million in mind. I'm like, $50 million.
$50 million.
Sorry, I threw you off on that.
Well, no, somebody on the text line said it's in the contract. I'm like, okay, I've looked at the contract, so now I need to.
I just heard that.
This is on Unsportsmanlike.
I believe so. I think so.
Okay. Well, we'll sort that out. But you know, when he initially tweeted Trinidad Chambliss, the Trinidad Tobago, everyone took that as, oh, he's coming to LSU.
Yep.
Oh, you're gonna get him. Now. We'll see if Chambliss even gets this year. That he's got Tom Mars and everything, and they're trying to get this year, and it's kind of flimsy. Doesn't mean it won't happen. I mean, there's been other flimsy suits that have prevailed. But, yeah, the fact that he is signing with Ole Miss, like you said earlier, Connor, pretty awesome, actually. Kawhan Lacy coming back, pretty awesome. I don't know how you don't root for Pete Golding.
The stuff he's been saying is impressive.
Just
trying to move on and keep the focus on the players and the team and how they've kind of rallied.
No doubt. And, you know, look, I don't know. Now, Ole Miss fans, maybe this is wishful thinking on their part. I've heard some Ole Miss fans say, if you look at Lane, like, you know, when Golden got in there, how much better things got and everything, and he's really the key. You know, okay. I mean, I don't know.
Could he land the full-time gig?
I'd love to think so. He is.
Yeah, he is.
He's got
That's it. He's got it. Okay, good.
Yeah. So he's going to get his opportunity. I mean, I've already got my hotel next fall for LSU at Ole Miss. I mean, that's gonna be a scene.
Make sure you pack your mustard bottles.
Yeah. Oh,
and your golf balls.
Pack a helmet. What I'm gonna do? Freaking full body, vest. But I actually was gonna grab bag and go into the some of the stuff about rigged games, but we didn't have time. Lane, you're just so special. You got me rolling on this stuff, and congratulations to you. Now, when we come back, Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports. We will get into all things NFL with him. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.